meetings did till just about 12:30, so that's why a little late, and some of the folks are probably out having something to eat. The first bill we'll visit about, Senator Dibble's bill, Senate Bill 897. You have some wonderful authors, I see, Senator Dibble.
Indeed.
Dibble, Metzen, Chaudhry, Sedgham, and Scheid. So, boy,
Mr. President, some of the most...
Pretty good lineup.
Some of the wisest and most powerful senators around here.
That's good.
A little deep in here, that's too, bold. But why don't you tell the committee what your bill does, and welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 897 has to do with the redevelopment account administered out of deed by the Public Facilities Authority. We are probably very familiar with that. This is an important fund that we put money into every couple of years for the purpose of, exactly as the title describes, redeveloping, and it's used, greatly used by economic development authorities within the metropolitan area and in greater Minnesota to make sure that we're making the best reuse of existing land that has fallen into disuse or underutilization for the purposes of creating jobs. It's used a lot for brownfield cleanup, land acquisition, those sorts of things, particularly in those industrial areas where we have real opportunities because we have a lot of existing infrastructure in place that we can already make good use of, but there are unique challenges that the private sector can't overcome. The public sector has a role in playing and helping deal with some of the legacy problems that those properties present. Mr. Chair, the reason for the changes in the policy part of the bill are to recognize larger policies that are coming down the pike. I'm carrying a bill. Senator Bach is carrying a bill. We've seen, of course, the constitutional amendment on the sales tax. So there's some attention being paid to emerging priorities of the public as well. And so this is an attempt to bring recognize some of the public benefits and some of the public policies that are emerging so that these dollars can be combined with those policies, those priorities, and other dollars that are out there. So you see the bill as it is. It adds the notion of reducing vehicle miles traveled to the potential list of characteristics that the commission uses to examine the competitive grant process. Looking at these redevelopments as an alternative to building out on green fields. Again, that gets to land use, intelligent land use, sprawl, those sorts of issues. Arts and culture, of course, that's a direct relationship to the legacy dollars and some of the opportunities that might be out there. And, of course, we want to put some more money into this because we're going to run out in 3 weeks, I understand. We'll be out of money in this redevelopment fund in about 3 weeks, and so we're asking Senator Langseth to recharge the card. Mr. Chair, I do have an oral amendment suggested to me by one of the stakeholder groups, Greater Minnesota, so that this bill isn't so focused on metropolitan area. I did write it to council. What I would propose, Mr. Chair, is on line 12, recognizing a public benefit as reduction of vehicle miles traveled. I would insert those words after efficient use of public transportation and before efficient use of existing infrastructure. And then moving down to line 22, where it says, and the project's ability to reduce vehicle miles traveled, I would just simply lop that off and make that a new paragraph 5 so that notion isn't just tied to metropolitan area. If the project can reduce vehicle miles traveled somewhere else, that's taken to be a potentially positive aspect of a competitive grant proposal wherever it is in Minnesota.
Understand that. I think that just, we've got it up here, the language. So Senator Rosen moves the amendment. All those in favor? Let's see, do we have a quorum? 2, 4, 5, 6, 7. Senator Boniff was here. So we have a quorum.
We don't have
one. I guess we need one more. Gimsy, could you move to the next chair and we'll count you?
Fill in for Gerlach.
All right, but we can't move the amendment at this time. Why don't we the title kind of says Senator Dibble, Greater Minnesota, but this is a 50-50 thing, isn't it? Or I think
yeah,
that was
and it wound up being called Greater Minnesota on your agenda, but it's 50. Yeah, I mean it's 50-50.
I think
state,
it
metro
went
and greater.
One way or another, there for a couple of years.
We had a few years of anxiety on that subject.
I think we finally, we won't get into
Minnesota.
That debate, but I think we've got it figured out now.
Yeah,
or we think. But this has been a very successful Senator Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, what is the average amount that is usually in that redevelopment fund? What does it usually carry on its account?
We could either ask, I don't know, Mr. Chair. Terry Coleman can help us with that from the Public Facilities Authority, or someone from Minnesota Solutions can help
right
us.
Right behind you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, we like to say about average is about $5 million a year. We've been getting, but it ranges anywhere from a low of one on up to like $9 million. So it varies on appropriation, depending on how generous Senator Langseth is.
Commissioner, state your name for the.
For the record, my name is Terry Coleman, Executive Director of the Public Facilities Authority. And although this is a DEED program, we are under contract interagency agreement with DEED to manage this, as well as several other community. Based program. So.
Mr. Chair.
Sorry.
Senator Rosa.
And Senator Dibble. So, Mr. Coleman, you're in favor of this appropriation or the direction of this bill, or is this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosa, we're neutral on it. We don't consider it, it's public policy, and it's not going to have a major impact on the program. We do look at a lot of these things overall benefit anyway, and it just puts it in the statute. As far as money, obviously, it's not the governor's budget, so I will avoid.
How can you say it doesn't have a major impact on us? What do you mean by that? Why don't we need the appropriation, don't we?
We'll be out of money this next round coming up in a few weeks.
Well, that's not good, is it?
No, so we'll be a year without money. But the reason I won't comment on it is because it's not in the governor's budget.
Okay, now. I bet you'd like to say privately it works pretty well. Smile if that's correct. Yeah.
The program is very successful. It leverages.
Very successful. It leverages, yes.
A lot of private investment. So.
But you can't comment. Okay.
But we have no qualms with the change in policy. And
the words are,
like
yeah.
The miles traveled, reducing carbon footprints, that's becoming pretty standard at almost at the federal and state level on all the financing programs that the government's involved in. Something we've got to learn to live with.
Well, we don't want to learn to live without the money, though, I don't think. All right. Thank you, sir. Any further comments?
Just a couple more comments, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to mention to Senator Rosen, this money, this fund is highly competitive, and as Mr. Coleman said, runs out of money quickly. Certainly use every nickel of the 20 that we're asking for, because I think it's well utilized by economic development authorities from around the state. $5-9 million never enough. So just wanted to
touches
put
every
that
part,
out there.
Every part of the state is
exactly
in on this. Senator Day.
And it's very cost effective because it takes, like I said, takes advantage of existing infrastructure, cleans up parcels that are and helps assemble parcels that are very difficult that otherwise just wouldn't happen in the private sphere. So it kind of helps clear the way. And then I just wanted to mention this was brought to us by the League of Minnesota Cities, Metro Cities, and Minnesota Solutions. And they're supportive of this.
Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dibble, explain to me and the project's ability to reduce vehicle miles traveled. How does that enter into what you're trying to do here?
Well, similar, Mr. Chair, Senator Day, similar to the bill that we heard in transportation that I carried, that talks about taking a look at on a regional level and on a municipal level how development and redevelopment occurs when destinations are constructed in closer proximity to one another. If you've got services and your jobs and your education, near other sorts of places where people need to go. They're either going to be able to use transit more effectively and more efficiently, or not have to drive as much. It's very simple. It's very standard in the planning, in the municipal planning and land use planning practice.
Does that mean that someone's in a transit lane?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble, so we would like people to live near where they work, and therefore they could ride their bike to work and not have a vehicle or whatever. Something along that line, or that's how we should plan our communities. And
Mr. Chair, Senator Day, people can own a car if they like. I own a car and I have to drive from time to time. But I think people, would like from time to time to not have to use their car. I think people would like to be able to live near where they shop and live near where they work and live near where they go to school. And have alternatives to just simply driving around, or driving, a half hour, 45 minutes, or whatever it is.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Dibble, why do we need language to tell them that? Why don't people just do that? I mean, if they want to be closer,
Mr. Chair. We're not telling anyone to do anything. We're simply allowing for choices, and we're allowing for criteria to be placed into this fund, which is a competitive fund for some dollars that help to develop and redevelop land that's difficult to develop and redevelop. That recognizes that it's all about choices, Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble, are there many communities in the metro area that are kind of aren't too much availability of public transit? Kind of mixing my words here a little bit, but there's some kind of, because these are priorities, and you're adding another.
Right, and the.
And I'm just wondering if there's parts of the metro area that aren't serviced very well by public transit, if that they could be fenced out a little bit here.
And this says, shall give priority to redevelopment projects with one or more of the following characteristics. So,
I see. So you could list any one of the six here.
Yeah, so it's not locking all of these into all of these. It's just adding this to the list of items that can be considered as a community is
putting
together
a couple of the 10
proposal.
Okay, I get it.
And then they say, well, this is near a transit line, or this is near a major employment center, or this is near a major education institution.
Now you're just adding one more to that, those nine criteria, right. Which, Senator Day, I understand what you're saying, but I think that's still, if you've got a good project, you're going to meet a couple of these criteria out of the 10, I think.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Dibble understands where I'm coming from.
I
know very well where Senator Dibble's coming from, and sooner or later, there will be people that will wake up someday and they will find out what they have. And I just don't want it to be in my Senate district. It's fine up here. They can take away the cars from everybody in the metropolitan area and I'll be fine. It doesn't bother me. I just get a little nervous about my own communities where we kind of like our vehicles. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
That's a good invention.
It's a very good invention. Probably the best.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just say Senator Day continually mischaracterizes what I'm trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
So that's why I continue to respond to Senator Day. Not trying
you
to
guys
take
have
anyone's
must
car,
have a lot of fun
create
on the Transportation Committee.
we should have something, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dibble. We should get some kind of a bill that would basically say that the people in Minneapolis can only have one car. We have a lot of mass transit for them, and they could have just one car. We could reduce congestion and all of these wonderful things, and it would probably affect a few of my children, but in that they like a metropolitan area and they like trains and all the whistles and stuff, that would be good. We could maybe that would be a bill that I should try.
And then, Mr. Chair, I'll counter with a bill that says everyone needs to live at the edge of the metropolitan area out in the middle of a farm field, and each family has to support two cars, and they can't walk or bike or take transit trip anywhere because they absolutely have to live out in the middle of sprawl and pay for
automobile traffic and all the roads that you have to build.
That would be
to
good.
Do that.
Boy, this that is
good. That could be rural, that could be rural economic development.
Senator Tavassotti.
Mr. Chairman, I think this has to come to my committee, so I just want to point that out.
Now, you know.
Well, it's bonding and it's.
I was thinking of something else, and I probably shouldn't say it. It's the committee I chair.
Well, I consider it to be my committee now.
Okay. It's all.
It took me 16 years to get one of these chairmanships.
So it's
so,
my committee.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dibble, on our agenda, and we made reference to this right beforehand, it says the Greater Minnesota Redevelopment Account bond issue. And I think I missed one of the oral amendments that I was supposed to move for you. Where in this language change deals with Greater Minnesota issues, besides maybe the arts and the culture, but is that the first oral amendment that you put up on line 112? I mean, I'm trying to figure out why it would be mischaracterized as Greater Minnesota.
Because on line where it says paragraph 4 on line 22, says proximity to public transit if located in the metropolitan area and the project's ability to reduce vehicle miles traveled. And folks from Greater Minnesota, Coalition Greater Minnesota City, said, well, that ties that so much to the metropolitan area. That aspect, that ad, then gets tied to metropolitan area. So why don't we take that out and make it separate, the reduction of vehicle miles traveled. That way that characteristic can be characterized for proposals around the state.
Oh, that's enough.
But the fund itself is available to communities throughout the state, if that's your question.
Okay.
That's spelled out somewhere else. That it's in the same section, but the 50-50 is spelled out somewhere else. Different subdivision. Okay, any further? We do have a quorum, Bob.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I found on line 212, it says, shall make grants that distribute available money to sites both within and outside of the metropolitan area. And then it goes on to say at least 50% of the money for sites located outside the metropolitan area.
Oh, then it does talk about the 50%. Excuse me, it is in here. I'm sorry.
So line's 12 through like 15.
I missed that in here, but it is spelled out, Senator Rosen. So we. We're on the Rosen Amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. All right, further discussion on the bill. Senator Skoy, move Senate File 897 as amended and. He referred to the full finance committee, which I think that's how we do it. Then they get it down to Senator Tavassotti's committee. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Senator Kielash, welcome to this friendly committee. Thank you. First time I think you've been here. Senate File 89, you may... Mr. Nelson with you, too, and
yes, I do.
You can proceed to tell the committee what your bill does.
It's a tough act to follow between the Senators Dibble and Day, even on the Transportation Committee. They have too much fun, I think. But my bill, number 89, modifies definitions and related unemployment assistance, training, and availability for suitable employment. In Section 1, the Reemployment Assistance Training specifies that apprenticeship training meeting requirements of the apprenticeship program under Chapter 178 is Reemployment Assistance Training. In Section 2, it's available for suitable employment is defined under current law to maintain eligibility for unemployment benefits. A student must be willing to quit school in order to accept suitable employment. The new language requires that a student must be willing to discontinue regularly scheduled classes to accept employment. If the attendance would restrict the applicant from accepting suitable employment or the or if the scheduled class can't be changed or other arrangements can't be made, reemployment assistance training is exempted from the requirement that classes in conflict with an employment opportunity be discontinued. One of the things this allows for is the current state of the economy and flexibility in those folks trying to upgrade their skills and meeting those requirements, as well as dealing with folks taking classes outside the normally scheduled workday for their line of work. So, Mr.
Nelson,
please.
Now, what does it say that they could go to school and try to better themselves as they're collecting the UI? I mean, simplified. Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I'm the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program in Minnesota. Senator Metzen, as to your question, yes, it provides greater flexibility within the unemployment program, allowing individuals to go to school while still requesting unemployment benefits.
I would think that'd be a good thing, you know, let them continue on and then still, you know, encourage it. Maybe that's what this bill does, but go ahead.
Senator Metzen, what we're trying to get at, and one of the things is we're trying to get at a worker who happens to attend training, additional training, while still restricting benefits to somebody who may be a student who just happens to work. The unemployment program was never intended for a student who just happens to pick up some little part-time job someplace. But it was never intended to restrict a worker who's happens trying to get some additional training to upgrade the skills. And quite frankly, the statute doesn't fit with how schools have changed. Now we have weekend schools, proliferation of night classes, internet classes, and all the rest. And the statute, quite frankly, was written in the 80s before schools have changed. One of the things on Section 1 on apprentices, that's kind of a new phenomenon. It had never occurred before, but we've seen a proliferation of apprentices now who are on layoff. And they're caught in a catch-22 because under the current law, they have to be willing to quit school to collect unemployment benefits. But if they're willing to quit school, they'd be kicked out of the apprenticeship program. And the apprenticeship program is how they get work. So to be eligible for unemployment benefits, they have to, in effect, be ineligible for the apprenticeship program. So they're caught in a real catch-22, and it just hasn't occurred before because we didn't have the proliferation of apprentices who are unemployed, and so we need to fix that. This bill, we've worked with the authors over the past number of months to work with this. We work with them in crafting this language.
And you support the language, your department?
The department is officially neutral on this bill.
Smile
because it is
really a...
It is not a administration initiative.
Hey, Wes.
But we work with the authors to craft the language to get it to do exactly what the authors wanted it to do, and we would not oppose this language.
All right, I think any further discussion, Senator Rosen?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash. Is there some kind of rough estimate how this is going to affect the UI fund?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rosen, no, that's very difficult to predict. I don't think it's going to have a substantial impact on the Unemployment Insurance Trust Fund, but it's hard to get a handle on this. I could give you, I could go back and get an estimate of the number of people who are currently students who are denied, but that doesn't mean they're all going to qualify under this. This is still fairly restrictive. It doesn't mean we pay everybody who's attending school. Again, what we're trying to get at is a worker who happens to try to take additional training versus a student who just happened to have worked. And I think this bill gets at a lot better than current law at that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
So, Mr. Nelson, you are in favor of this bill.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rosen, I have been instructed to testify that we are officially neutral on this bill, but we did help the authors draft it.
Well, let me thank you for your cooperation with the author. I know you've been helping him quite a bit on this, and we know that you were smiling when you were said officially neutral. So,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Nelson, taking advantage of your attendance today and going a little farther afield from Senator Kielash's bill, yesterday we heard some sobering news about at least predicted unemployment levels going forward in calendar 2009. You've at least been privy to that, to the latest state budget forecast. Have you had a chance to digest that in any way and try to figure out what that means, what 120,000 unemployed Minnesotans would mean for the fund that you oversee?
Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Michelle, a meeting is scheduled for Monday with the commissioner. We're currently having our numbers crunchers take the recent budget forecast and apply that to the unemployment insurance trust fund. Presentation will be made to the commissioner on Monday. We expect that it will be not as rosy as the last prediction, which had the trust fund going into deficit status in about Christmas and hitting a deficit of over $1 billion in the first quarter of 11. We do not expect it to be better.
And Mr. Chair.
Sorry, Michelle.
Mr. Nelson, remind me when you, at least the last time you were testifying on the subject, when were you anticipating that we would need to go to the federal government to borrow?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Michelle, well, as soon as it goes into deficit, which was it would be about Christmas time, we go to borrow. But I do want to point out the federal stimulus provides that if we borrow, there's no interest on charged on that through 2010. So we do get a break, which we've estimated the break will amount to a break of $21 million because we will not have to pay any interest on that borrowed money at least through 2010. We are kind of hoping, as everyone else is, that the stimulus will help solve some of the trust fund's issues.
And Mr. Chair, Michelle. I know this is beyond the scope of this bill, but it might be nice to have Mr. Nelson and some of his folks back maybe after Monday in this presentation that you're making to the commissioner so that we can have the benefit of some of those numbers. I know you've worked closely with this committee, Mr. Nelson.
I think that's a fair question, is that Mr. Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Michelle, Senator Tomasoni is carrying a bill been introduced, I believe will be introduced tomorrow, it's in the hopper, which is the UI stimulus bill. Under the stimulus available to Minnesota is $130.1 million for the unemployment insurance trust fund, so long as a few relatively minor changes are made, policy changes are made in the statute. So that bill will be coming, and
I think we might even be hearing that next week sometime. So Senator Tomasoni's bill.
And
so Nelson.
Chairman, Senator Michelle, we'll certainly have all of those projections available for this committee at
Monday?
That time. By Monday, certainly.
I believe we're going to hear that bill Monday at 12:30, so you'll have that information, Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, my understanding of the
fund
numbers we heard yesterday was that even with the benefit of this federal spending, this stimulus, we are anticipating that that would save or create 45,000 jobs, but we are still forecasting going down 120,000, even with the federal spending. So, the need to get the latest updates and numbers from you on what that means for our unemployment system.
Certainly on Monday we'll have that.
Monday we will have that. Okay, good questions.
Does this bill have to go anywhere else? Anybody ask for this bill?
It's a money issue. Yeah, it's a separate fund, but it's still a money thing. So, Senator Carlson moves Senate File 89 and refer to the Finance Committee. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. We've got a couple of confirmations. One, the Electricity Board. Mr. Hoskins, he's Caledonian. I didn't think he's served on the board for a while, and he's got 20 years experience. He served on the state board in the past as a journeyman, and he's seeking the contractor seat on the Board of Electricity. So he's recommended by the governor. And Senator Lance moves his confirmation. All those in favor, signify.
Chairman, I have a question.
Yeah.
I was just looking at this. The notice of appointment identifies him as a master electrician member to the Board of Electricity, but the application refers to the contractor's seat. Is there any distinction there?
I don't know, but you still make the motion.
I'm happy to do so. I'm sure Mr. Hoskins is fine.
Looks like he's very well qualified. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We did ask, we don't need Mr. Hoffmeyer. Just maybe you could come and sit down for a second. And this is a new one, so it's a confirmation of Stephen Hoffmeyer, Commissioner, Bureau of Mediation Services. Just identify yourself in 1.5 minutes about yourself and your background. Welcome, Mr. Hoffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Steve Hoffmeyer. I was born and raised in South St. Paul and in Grove Heights. I've been with the Bureau of
Mediation. Let's go through those towns again where you were born and raised.
I was born and raised in the beautiful river city of South St. Paul and moved out to the country in Invergrove Heights.
You're confirmed.
I've been with the Bureau of Mediation Services since April of 2002.
But I hit the gavel. If you've got the order, keep quiet, right, Senator Botta?
So moved.
What else? That's the most important things you've already said. So,
been with the Bureau for 6.5 years, Deputy Commissioner for the last 5.5 years. The Governor appointed me in January, and it's a great job, and I love the confirmation.
Okay. Senator, any questions of Mr. Hoffman? Senator Botiff moves to recommend Mr. Hoffmeyer's confirmation to the Minnesota Senate floor. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got, we're going to talk a little bit about something the governor seems to be looking at a little more lately. It's called, talking about reviving the Board of Government Innovation and Cooperation. The governor, I think, took a little bite out of this a month or two ago. He went over to Wisconsin, talked to the I think it's Democrat governor, it doesn't matter, about maybe some shared services. And we did this from 1993 to 2002. It was called the Board of Innovation and Cooperation. What it did was it promoted shared services, innovation,
And it was 11 board member, I believe, back then. They were department heads, administrative law judges, state auditor, and some legislators. Let me give you a couple of examples. I was on the board for a while, and just two quick examples that I could think of right away. And one was in Hutchinson, Minnesota, where we gave a grant to, doesn't matter who got the grant, either the county or the city or the wasn't the state, the county or the city. They were going to build a garage for salt and sand. And what happens is that the Minnesota legislature and this board granted them a small amount of dollars to talk about how they can consolidate. So what happened, instead of the city building a salt and sand garage, the state already had one out that way, and the county had one within all a three-block radius. What happened is we gave them a grant. They built one building and purchased the salt and sand and other products out of one spot instead of three within a 1 or 2 block radius. Out where I come from in Inver Grove, the community college was going to add a bigger library to the college. The city was going to build a library, and the county, the Dakota County Library Authority, was going to build a library. So what happened is we give them a $40,000 grant. They collaborated together, all three of the governmental units. They built one library on campus, and the campuses, they were all within, again, a block or two of one another. So there's one library in Inver Grove instead of three. And this is what I think. So we wanted to start the discussion today to see what we can, you know, let's get it going. We've got Senator Amber Reichgott in the audience, and she along with Senator Hottinger, I believe, kind of got this thing going a few years ago. And I just thought that it might make some sense to maybe revitalize this thing. I mean, we're all talking about saving dough, doing things in a more efficient, effective manner. And it also would deal with waivers, you know, where this group can waive some rules and regulations and streamline some situations, and worked out pretty well, too. So I know Senator Laurie and some others are interested in this. Senator Rosen has talked to me about it. But I thought with that as just a very brief background, we'll just go a few more minutes. But Senator Reichgott, maybe you could come forward. And she's been working on this for about, I don't know what I called you, about 3-4 months ago, and you've dug in pretty hard on this. And but I think with this reinventing government and the way the budget sits today, Senator Michelle and others, these are the kinds of things we have to look at, you know, how we can cooperate, how we can do things together. I know another example, I don't know what towns they were, but a couple of townships joined forces 10 years ago up north somewhere. Instead of two township boards, they had one township board. Instead of eight trucks, they were able to get down to six, and life still goes on in that township up there. And recently, it's too bad we didn't have this in effect now, the South Metro Fire Department, South St. Paul, West St. Paul, joined forces. Instead of two chiefs, four lieutenants, there's one chief, two lieutenants. But you know what? It costs about $100,000 to paint the trucks and to do all that stuff they had to do. But in the long run, this will save $100,000s, you know, because of the consolidation. And maybe we could go back and collect a little money for South St. Paul, West St. Paul. But anyway, Senator Reichgott, welcome to the committee, and you can give a presentation of what you've been doing. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Amber Reichgott-Young. I'm Vice President and Chief Advancement Officer of Lutheran Social Service in Minnesota. And it has been, hard to believe, 9 years since I sat in one of those chairs in this room. It's been a long time, but it feels like just yesterday. It's great to be back, and I truly appreciated the opportunity when Senator Metzen and others called to revisit this idea that we had worked on in the 1990s with Senator Hottinger. And it was 1993 that the original Government Board of Innovation and Cooperation was passed into law. it's a different time right now. And so when we met informally as a group with some of the interested legislators on this, it became clear that times have changed and so should the board. It should not be just the old board reincarnated. It should be now a board that deals with or has a function that deals with the needs of this time. Back in 1993, if you recall, it was the time of reinventing government. And we were talking a lot about how we can merge government services, how we can merge governments themselves, reinventing government to do things differently, more streamlined and such. All good things to do. And so that's where the waiver idea was born, and which can certainly continue on. But this time is different. Everybody is looking for new and different ways to deliver services, to redesign systems so that you are taking less costs administratively and providing more dollars for the delivery of services for the people who need to be served. And so we really do need to take a fresh look, because it is a matter of survival for a number of counties and cities right now, and a matter of how we're even going to do these services. More and more people need services in these times of need. So how do we do that? Well, when we talked as a group, we talked about how do we meet the changing times. And we suggested that we talk with some of the other folks out there. And we came to the conclusion that we can't do it alone. Government cannot do this alone. And that maybe what we need to do is partner with nonprofits, partner with businesses, which is part of the jurisdiction of this committee, and partner with foundations. They not only bring different new ideas, but I think none of those groups can do it alone. So the idea came out of this, these initial meetings, that we might bring this to a next level and call it something like the Board on Government and Social Innovation. So the Board of Government and Social Innovation, and that it would include, instead of in the 90s, just members of local governments. And state government, people outside of government. So it might include nonprofit organization leaders. It might include foundation leaders. It might include business leaders, as well as government leaders. And that way, we'd also bring in, I think, more support and resources for the board by engaging that group. And so the initial group seemed to want to do that, and so I then contacted on behalf of the group some foundation leaders who have also been thinking about big thoughts about how we redesign services at a time when we need this. And some of the people that talked with me about this are Sandy Vargas of the Minneapolis Foundation. Let's see, we had Gary Cunningham of the Northwest Area Foundation, Pam Wheelock, many of you know her, now with the Bush Foundation, and through her also Peter Hutchinson's ideas. Some of this all came together in subsequent meetings, and I basically put it down on some paper here to share with the group, and I will just, with your permission, go through that. Mr. Chairman, that's it might fine. Be the easiest way to do that, but that's the background of how this came to be. This is a compilation of the ideas that many of these people, the foundation heads and others, had for how this might be put together. The bottom line message from the foundations and business and nonprofit leaders was this. We think it's a good idea. A lot of support for the concept of bringing back the government board and its original functions, which are, as Senator Metzen was saying, the removing of the obstacles and the barriers to getting things done, and also the incentives for cooperative and service sharing. There were a lot of support for that. But what people were saying is that, but what we need to do is scale it up. We need to scale it up. And what we had before just didn't have enough oomph to it to make a big enough difference. Ultimately, some of the investments we made saved about $7 million a year. But now the foundations are saying we need to save hundreds of millions of dollars a year. So how do we do that? And that's what this is about, is scaling it up. Just to start out, the board previously had mainly government members. And as you can see in this proposal here, other members would include nonprofits and businesses and foundations. It would be an independent board, but it would have ties to the Legislative Audit Commission. I know some of you are members of that commission. And I did meet with Legislative Auditor Jim Nobles, who did see real potential here to tie these together, because They'd be independent of each other, but to tie them together, because what organization within state government knows more about where we have gaps in service delivery and how we can be more efficient, because they have been doing studies on that. And they are really interested in finding a way that a board or a function that you can direct for for implementing the great recommendations of the legislative auditor. So what we did was we basically took the original functions of the board. We're keeping those in play here in our proposal. And for those of you who have not, been aware of it before, it basically was two things. One was the waiver opportunity where cities and counties and others could come forward and suggest, hey, this obstacle is causing us to not be able to get an effective outcome. If we could just take this away, there's no need to publish things five times in newspapers, for example, legal notices. It's costing a lot of money. Can we take that away, instead go to this outcome and be responsible for this outcome? And so this board would be able to grant those waivers. Now, the reason they could grant those waivers is because they were temporary waiver grants, and they would only have a life of about 4 years, and eventually they would have to come back to the legislature, and the legislature would have to be permanently approving those waivers for them to actually go into law, because a board really can't do the work of the legislature. So there was that whole function that was put into that. The second original function was, as Senator Metzen said, the grants, the service-sharing grants. The grants that help people to make that investment up front, that plan, that cooperative investment, so that they could do more in the future and save dollars long term. And that that notion here is also retained. But where I think it gets interesting is how we expand or scale up the expanded functions of the board. One of the things that the board did do in 93 was to encourage grants for service budget management model grants. Basically, those are grants to do system redesign. And the bottom line was, how can we eliminate administrative costs and redesign services to serve more for less? And so what would be some of those things that we could do in service redesign? What could we ask the board to do? And so we took a look at some of these studies. Legislative Auditor had a study back in January of 2007 called Human Services Administration. So I used some things out of there. How can we, for example, streamline state contracting, contracting for service delivery? I can tell you from Lutheran Social Service perspective, we have many different kinds of services, but we have 1,000 different contracts in the state of Minnesota, some of which, 22 of which, are for the same service signed by different counties or entities. Same exact contract, same exact service, but we're all signing 22 different contracts. We can really save a lot of paperwork and money and administrative time. That money instead could go to serve people. How can we streamline contracting? How can we provide more focus on consumer choices, more options for cooperative delivery of government services? How can we bundle services for contracting? There are many different things we can do. This report talks about ways that we can increase statewide contracting, that we can do regional contracting, that sort of thing, which is cost effective. So those are some of the ideas that we put in here, but of course this legislature can put in whatever things you think are important. But the key thing here and the key change is that in this case, it's not just that this former board is going to receive proposals and evaluate the things that are brought to it, but this board would be more proactive, and this board would actually facilitate proposals. In other words, we need to look at this. What can we do to create a redesign of this system? Or facilitate proposals brought by others and say, that's a great idea, and here's a foundation who has a similar interest, and can you talk with them about possibly getting some fund money to help make that happen? So in other words, more active role in making things happen. Legislative Chair. Auditor Jim Noel. Oh, I'm sorry. Seems to be a question.
Senator Saltzman.
Mr. Chair, I think what's important about this is that some people may say, why do we need to do this? Can't this just happen on its own? And I think what's really important here is that sometimes you have to have something in place that starts to nudge this to happen, and I think that that's what's really important here. I know with Senator Bonoff's bill on shared services, people could say, well, you know, there are some school districts doing it, but sometimes having a very specific policy in place and also encouraging it is extremely important because it is change, and you have to support those who want to try things very differently. So I think that's something to keep in mind here is at this very critical time in our economy and trying to streamline, become more effective and also efficient, having a group that encourages that kind of development is very important.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the point, Senator Saltzman, another great example is the governor's recommendations for joint sharing of county human services. That's already been done in the state. I do have two counties that share joint services and have been doing it for over 20, 25 years, and it works very well. Well, why haven't other counties joined that example? Because we haven't put their feet to the fire, basically, and made them make that collaborative, cooperative relationship happen and figure out what services they can
share.
And I think the proposal needs a little tweaking. I don't think we should really look at it per population, but more as what services are being provided by those counties and make those relationships work. But it's the same example.
Mr. Chair.
Well, we know the direction is we have to do more with less around here. I mean, we know that for sure. And if this kind of consolidation and less government, and we can eliminate some roadblocks along the way, I mean, I think we ought to give this a hard look. Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Young, I'm not sure what I want to call you senator, but you might not want to be called that anymore.
Oh, I'm always, you know, someone once said that you carry that title until you die, and that is an amazing thing.
Well, we hope you carry it a long
time. Whatever right you wish, Senator.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Chair, the kind of general question I had was, is it your thought that this, you know, reconstituting this group in some fashion would look at better ways to spend or do things, and could you also look at proposals to actually eliminate some layers and some levels of government? Would you take it to that extreme? Because I think we need to go there as policymakers, but I see kind of how to move dollars and services and get them to the right spot. But I think my question is, would you see this group entertaining ideas of going even a little farther than that?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. And if that isn't written in, then we need to make that more clear. Yes. Reducing the layers of services. There are a considerable number, I can tell you from our work, that there are a considerable number of layers that we believe are just, you know, taking administrative dollars away from services. So, yes, we could. And to Senator Rosen's point, I'm just going to also add that the one way you could do this with some of the local governments is not so much is to provide incentives, not so much a hammer, but an incentive. So what is it that they get if they do reduce some of these layers, or they bundle some of these services, or reduce the number of providers? And that would be one way to look at it.
Okay. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, I do appreciate you bringing this forward, because as I've worked on my shared services initiative and seen the tremendous resistance that is out there when you bring forward these kinds of ideas, I think it would be great to have as a resource this type of board or whatever that we could go to and say, we know there needs to be work done, you know, and have them partner with us out in the field to make some of those changes happen.
Good point. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, could you please explain a little bit again? You mentioned the mandates that we could temporary relief for 4 years. What was that?
Yes, Mr.
A little better.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rosen, in the 1993 legislation, there was a great deal of time and effort put in by particularly my colleague, Senator John Hottinger, at the time to find a way where local governments could come to the board and say, if we could remove this piece, this mandate, we could achieve these results. And there are many examples, and I don't have them. The others that were on the board would have to provide those. Many results where there were times that the board said, we can remove that. And then it occurred. The results occurred. It came back to the legislature. The legislature said, this is good. If it's good for Ramsey County, why isn't it good for 86 other counties? And then the legislature would then say, well, maybe we should just remove that mandate for the entire state. And so within 4 years, they would have to do that, or the waiver would expire. And that the reason it would expire is because ultimately, under the Constitution, the legislature is the one that has to make those changes. A board cannot do that, even though there are six legislative members on the board. Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I have just maybe a couple last points on the last page I could share, and if people are interested. When I talked with some of the foundation leaders, they also talked about how to scale this thing up, how to make it more exciting and engage more local governments, nonprofits in this process. And so they suggested that a number of things that I thought were grand ideas to build up the upfront planning stages, making the board a clearinghouse of ideas that already are going on with community leaders. You know, there's a lot of good things going on in the community. So what's going on in Sherburn County that maybe we can learn from in another county, right? Web applications where promising practices and information can be shared. Research function, what's going on in other states and countries on this that we can learn from, okay? And a lot of times these cross boundaries in the legislature, so it's really important to have sort of a cross-cultural body because it's not one committee, so there isn't really a focus point here to do that. And lastly, one of my favorites is to facilitate regional conversations. And these would be conversations, government leaders, business, foundation, nonprofit leaders, to talk about the stories of success, the promising practices that are working, and new innovative opportunities. And so that you could really create some new ideas that need some incubation. So a board needs a little bit of staff. The government board had one key staff person in the past, an executive director. What was suggested in our conversations this time would be to have a staff member who is very versed in the system redesign waiver type work, but that there'd be a second staff person, and the sole function of that second staff person would be to develop the ways to sustain the board for the future without using state money. And that's what happened with the government board, because ultimately when the budget cuts and the budget cuts happen, they just, you know, it just got cut. As small as it was like $1 million a year for the staffing and all this good work they were doing, and ultimately they were saving $7 million a year from these possibilities. But this time, the suggestion is have a second staff member work with the foundations, the business community, and others to try to create, like, some sustainable funding. And so that second staff person would be assigned to do that. So what kind of funding? Well, I was looking and listening for really creative ideas, and I heard some. The first was, of course, we've got one-time money that is now at the legislature from the economic stimulus package. What better use of one-time money than to build a foundation for long-term reform that saves money in all of these areas? Now, I don't know if it fits all the regs, and that's your job. That's why, you know, you're...
You get paid so much.
Pardon me?
That's why we get paid so much.
I was going to say that, and then I thought, well, I know that's not true. So, but on the bottom line, I think that what we can do is maybe look at a good use of that one-time money. The second thing is that staff person, that second staff person, could look for monies that would sustain the board and the grants function by having a revolving fund, creating a revolving fund where after like the fourth or fifth year, that when a particular idea takes way and there's some savings, some of that savings come back into the fund, or somebody says that they'll match it back or something, whatever it is, but a revolving fund. The third idea that came up, which happens to be my favorite, is, and I think really one that takes this up to the next scale, scales it up than what we had in 93, and that is if you're going to come with a proposal for doing a, let's say that Hutchinson thing, you're going to want to build a bigger building or one building instead of two, but it takes planning and all that, that you come in with a, let's say, the Southwest Community Foundation out of Hutchinson, and they said, we're gonna grant 25% of the cost of that planning process so that you have a match from the community, and they are engaged in it. Or you find a foundation that has a real passion in the delivery of human services, whatever it is, and you bring in somebody to the table that is also going to help to fund that. And then the fourth thing, which I think came from Public Strategies Group when I talked with them about this, is that they talked about, well, maybe eventually the board can be providing some consultancy services on how to redesign government so that a local government can say, we got a problem. We got four counties here. We want to do something. We're losing. We don't have enough staff. We aren't serving who we need to serve. We want to take four counties' resources, put it together. Can you help us? Can we buy your services from the government board help us do this? And then, of course, there's funding that would come back to the board to pay for that. So that was another great idea that was brought up. So the final thing is that it's time. I cannot think of a time where a board of government and social innovation would be more accepted in the community, because everybody is looking for good ideas, and it can't be done by government alone. I think my one year now in leadership in the nonprofit sector tells me that there is explosive possibility of combining the power of nonprofits, the good work that they do, the good leadership of government, the good work of foundations together is way, way more potential when you bring them together. And so that's what underlies the scaling up of this proposal.
You think there's a little enthusiasm there from Senator Reichstadt? That's very good. We need more people like that are positive and looking forward to. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator, actually, this comment came from Senator Sparks, but...
it must be a good one.
It is. That's why I like it sitting next to him. It's the brainchild over here. And I think this is an important part that's maybe missing out of this document is the relationship with the feds and our federal delegation, because a lot of the waivers or agenda or direction is federal mandates that we need to address to make sure that they do their part. And the other comment, Mr. Chair, if I may?
Sure.
What other groups need to be a part of this that we already have in place? I'm thinking... you know, the relationships that will be developed because of this, like Enterprise Minnesota, you know, the biotechnology arena, all these different, I mean, they have to develop their relationships. So we don't want to duplicate. We just want to make sure that everybody's at the table. So that's just a comment.
That's good. Yeah, we got to. Well, I think we just wanted to. I think this is a tough times out there, and I think this could lead to something pretty good. And
Mr. Chair,
we got to again look to these areas of consolidation and innovation and long-term reform. And I think that's the direction Senator Reichstadt, myself, and some others are looking at. And so we're going to continue this discussion, and we're going to have a bill drafted. But I wanted the committee to be aware of. What we're up to, because this is a big function of this committee, I think. You know. Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just maybe an appetizer for Senator Reichstadt Young. We have 87 counties, over 800 cities, 1,800 townships. Given your involvement at multiple levels.
Right.
Do you think we need all that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Michelle, no. I don't. And I can say that in the 93 board, that one of the pieces that was successfully used was a pathway for cities to actually come together, and it was used several times. Senator Metzen, can you remind me, was it Norwood Young America that used it?
Yes,
and they came together as one entity. Was it Redwood Falls and like East Redwood or something like that? Or there was another one that did that, so that two came together.
Cities or townships?
The original thought in 93 that Senator Hottinger and I had was that it might be some connection with not just two cities coming together. Maybe there'd be some county services and city so that there might be some of that. School districts coming together could use the process. A little bit of funding, but more a process that helped them to do that. So in answer to your question, as a nonprofit leader now, how much simpler it could be for delivering services and getting to the basics right now. It could be much simpler.
Thank you.
We could, I think we gave $50 or $100 per capita to Young America and the other whatever town it was. To explore and to see how they could combine to give them, because of course you just don't just strike them up and do it. So we gave them some incentive, and it wasn't that much, but there was a stipend out there to get them to visit, and it worked. And we can do this. There's no limit to what this thing can, So we'll go forward. You talk about the private sector, how they could. We're just visiting up here about, if there's a lot of rules and regs and somebody wants to build a wind farm or something in Minnesota, how many agencies do they have to go through? What, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12? can this be done? I just thought of it because of you folks down there in the wind area. I don't know. Maybe there's a way to say you don't have to make a 12-stop shopping all here. Maybe there's a way you can come to 2-3 commissions and, I don't know that. But that's an example that I'm thinking of. Maybe we could do something in that area.
Mr. Chair, the governor's initiative, Drive to Success, is that something similar to that? Is streamlining some of the process?
Mm-hmm.
Is it?
Is the excellence?
Yeah, I think he's got some initiative. We'll just look at
in
depth a little more. Because I think we've got to go that,
mm-hmm.
And you want to encourage, not discourage, people that want to come into our state and do business. And anytime we can eliminate some roadblocks, I think that's good.
Mr. Chair, that's exactly right. It seems like we're trying to head down that process, but we just need the big guy, this bill, to move it along. We've got all these other pieces out there, and nobody's really talking to anybody, and it's not really moving like we need it to move at the rate we need it to move too, very quickly. And it just always amazes me why we should incentivize people to talk. But that's sometimes what it takes is you have to get together and you got to find the common ground. But
well, this is a business and jobs committee. And
yeah.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's one of the reasons why you'll see in one piece I didn't really talk about too much here was the connection with the Legislative Audit Commission and ways that we can, where the LAC can go to the board and say, this really needs to be looked at. So it's kind of the other way around and have the board facilitate or take initiative. And where the LAC feels that there's a place where there can be activity on some of the findings that really haven't taken root before, because so many times those findings are just, it's hard to focus in one committee. It has to be this larger place, this larger vehicle. I, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rosen, will continue to be available to serve as a resource to this group, to whoever would like to learn more about it or to understand the history better, to talk to some more people, because I truly am committed to this notion. And I think that even more than 93, that this opportunity is ripe now. So I just want to offer that. If people have questions, I'd be happy to work with them as well.
These aren't... goes without saying, but I'm going to say it anyway. These aren't DFL issues or Republican issues. They're people's issues, and I feel we should all be in this together moving forward, and I need to asking for and hoping for certainly bipartisan support going forward. So, okay, I think that's any other. Are we meeting Monday at 12:30? We have some bills up. Aye. Agency. Okay, we have some bills up Monday, so thank you.
Thank you.
Meeting stands adjourned.